I'm Tiziana Deering here on Radio Boston. Let's talk about the city. Boston is just over 40 square miles, but you walk the 2 miles from Back Bay to Roxbury's Nubian Square, and your life expectancy will drop by roughly 23 years. Those are some of the findings from a report released today from the Boston Public Health Commission. And here to tell us more about what the commission found and what those findings tell us about the city, WBUR health reporter Martha Biebinger. Martha, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tiziana.
So first, just give us the headlines of the findings.
Well, overall in Boston, we saw life expectancy drop about 2.5 years. We'll just talk about Boston writ large for a second here. We're seeing this nationally as well due to COVID and what are sometimes called deaths of despair, which include the increase in drug overdose deaths, which the report shows is clearly a factor here in Boston. But getting to that life expectancy gap you just talked about, the report drilled down by census tract, which is a group of about 4,000 people, because the commission wanted to highlight what they call pockets of deprivation, areas that really need the most attention. And that's where we see this 23-year gap, almost a quarter of a century difference in the lifespan for residents of Nubian Square as compared to a section of the Back Bay.
So do we have a sense, Martha, of why the gap is so large?
Well, you probably won't be surprised, Tiziana. We'll talk about income and race. So in this census tract around Nubian Square, the average median household income is about $41,000 a year. In Back Bay, in this census tract, it's $141,000 a year. Roxbury is about 87% of residents are Black, Brown, Asian, or some combination, while in the Back Bay, 82% of residents are white. So when people are dealing with racism, sometimes daily, when they're working more than one job or can't work, so they're struggling to pay bills. They may be living in substandard housing with mold that triggers asthma or other illnesses. There are fewer trees, no calm, no lovely parks. The stress builds. So here's how Boston Public Health Commissioner Dr. Bizola Ojikutu describes the impact.
Even the land. And that chronic stress leads to higher blood pressure, it leads to higher cortisol levels, it leads to increased risk for cardiovascular disease. It leads to weight gain and risk of diabetes. So all these things are important in terms of health.
So essentially, Tiziana, it's a lifetime that all of these added challenges make and take a toll that results in fewer years of life.
So Martha, it was interesting because what you did was take a walk with Dr. Ojikutu and in the two neighborhoods that we're talking about as part of the illustration. Tell me a little bit more about what else you saw with her on that walk.
So some of the things that she highlighted had to do a lot with what we were just seeing from the sidewalks. So things like trash or dilapidated buildings or broken fences or, you know, there were literally no shade trees on the street that we walked down. And you contrast that to the walk we took in the Back Bay. We spent some time on the mall that runs down the middle of Comm Ave there. It was literally quieter because of the trees were absorbing the noise. There was a calm. There was a sense of peace. It was really tranquil. And in Roxbury, residents don't have places like that where they can go to relieve stress. So as we're walking, you know, down the sidewalks of the Back Bay, Dr. Ojikutu just saw so many things that highlighted the ways that people live differently on a daily basis.
Even the landscaping.
The landscaping is pristine. You don't see garbage on the street. It's really pleasant to walk around. I can imagine that people feel safe and have no qualms about, you know, exercising or being out after hours or at dusk or beyond.
And that really, all those things really make a difference. And what contributes to those, Tiziana, if I can give you a few more statistics, 91% of Back Bay residents have a college degree as compared to 44% in this area around Nubian Square. and more than twice as many residents of the Back Bay own their own home. So you just start to see a picture of really stark differences that contribute to this life expectancy gap.
So Martha, at your recommendation, we had a conversation just this morning with Dr. Sandro Galea, who's an epidemiologist and dean of the Boston University School of Public Health and a Back Bay neighbor, to talk a little bit more about that picture. So I'm going to ask you to sit tight because I want you and I both to listen a little bit more about his reaction to the findings. I started by asking him whether they surprised him.
No, it's unfortunately not surprising. We've known about these gaps for really several decades now. And we've known, obviously we're talking about Boston here. We've known that there are these gaps in Boston neighborhoods. We know that there are gaps even within cities and across the country. There are gaps between counties and gaps between zip codes. And some of these gaps are in areas, as you correctly point out, that are quite close together. And so this is really the characteristic of American health, which is deep gaps between people geographically close by, but otherwise having very different life experiences and very different health experiences.
There are some key demographic differences between these two neighborhoods: median household income, rates of home ownership, rates of college graduation, all higher in Back Bay, according to the reporting from, you know, Martha. Additionally, the vast majority of Back Bay is white. The majority of Nubian Square, people of color, predominantly Black and Latinx. That's demographic. What about environmental factors?
Yeah, all of those factors matter. And I think anybody listening to your last couple of sentences should come to the realization that it is impossible to talk about health separately from the assets that generate health. And I'm using the term assets generally: education and income and wealth and housing, livable wages, healthy environments, safe food to eat, water to drink, all of that. These are all assets. And those assets become our health. So when we have these health gaps, they really represent asset gaps. They mean that we have less access to education, less access to income, less access to wealth, less access to healthy neighborhoods, are more exposed to violence, and all of that becomes imprinted on our health. So unfortunately, these health gaps represent gaps in assets. And to address these health gaps, to close health inequities, we need to also address asset inequities. And the report that comes out from the Boston Public Health Commission makes this point very clearly. And it has been, for me, immensely heartening to see, under Dr. Ojigudu's leadership, placing health equity at the heart of what the commission does. Because I think what the commission is saying under Dr. Ojigudu's leadership is that our goal in health is not simply to make sure that we improve health overall. That is goal A. Goal B, and these are not in any particular order, is to make sure that there are no health left behinds, that we improve health for everybody, and really for everybody, meaning there are no health gaps.
So I want to put a finer point on two finer points on the thing you said there, Dr. Galea. When you say assets, the things that you're pulling out are what we also often call the social determinants of health, correct?
That's correct.
And I want to underscore that many of the things that you talked about, everything from water to education, right, are actually things where we rely on our public bodies to make specific investments. So if we're seeing gaps, it follows that what we're seeing is shortfalls in investments, does it not?
That's correct. And I think the link here is as follows, is that an investment in housing is an investment in health. An investment in a safer neighborhood is an investment in health. An investment in an effort to make sure everybody has a livable wage is an investment in health. And I think we are at a really important and, I'm hoping, positive time for this conversation in Boston. I think we have a health commissioner. I think we have a mayor who get this. And I'm seeing a lot more movement towards recognizing that investment in these social determinants and these assets are investments in health. And I feel like we have momentum in a way that we've never had in the past decade.
There are a set of reports that come out, right? We've been talking about the data that comes from the mortality report. One of the other pieces that is sticking in my head, Dr. Galea, is the physical environment, right? So asthma is a report that comes out. Obesity is a report that comes out. And the availability of green space is also something that is significantly different between Nubian Square, for example, and Back Bay. And it's another set of investments we are increasingly talking about environmental justice. A few weeks ago here on Radio Boston, we actually had a conversation about the long-term relationship between race-based systemic disinvestment in the history of Boston and long-term environmental impact. So how do you think about that public health balance when we are talking about long-term disparities in mortality rates?
Yeah, I think the your last couple sentences are really an entire graduate degree in public health right there. We have to take a step back, right? So you have historical forces, many of them being deeply rooted in what we now sort of label structural racism. Historical forces have resulted in these social determinants or assets being unevenly distributed. So that means, just to take one concrete example, the historical example of redlining, which was a practice that it really emerged out of the Homeowners Loan Corporation federally, which meant that people of color did not have access to be able to buy homes the same way as did white people. As a result, white people accumulated homes and the wealth that go with that. People of color did not. As a result, we had segregation of housing, resulting in some neighborhoods being poorer than others. Now, those neighborhoods accumulated unhealthy assets. For example, things like bus depots and areas that actually make the environment less healthy, and conversely, did not have things like grocery stores that result in green foods and healthy foods. That then becomes more asthma and worse eating habits, perhaps more obesity, more unhealthy diets, which become shorter lives, sicker lives. So all of that really is a physical health result today, 2023, of systemic disinvestment that comes from systemic injustice over the course of hundreds of years. Now, when I say that, and really I'm just paraphrasing what you had said, Tiziana, because I think you said it very well, I think a listener can reasonably enough throw their hands up in the air and say, well, what on earth can we do about that, right? This is just like so much, it's too much, it's everything. And I suppose my answer to that is, well, the fact that we're having this conversation, the fact that this is being recognized, the fact that we have a commissioner of the Boston Public Health Commission, the fact that we have a mayor who understands these things, means that we can start and we are starting to take the actions to undo some of these things. Now, part of that also is recognizing it takes time, like undoing 100 years of how we have structured social assets, unfortunately, doesn't happen today or tomorrow. It takes time. So, I feel like we are at an important moment of making the investments that will transform us in future. What I would like best, Tiziana, is for you and I, 10 years from now, to not be talking about such health gaps between two neighborhoods of Boston. I would like us to be talking about something else. And, my hopeful part of me says we're heading in the right direction. My more perhaps somber part of me says it's going to take us some time.
Dr. Sandra Galea of the Boston University School of Public Health there, and Martha Biebinger, you're still with us. I want to note your whole story is on our website at WBUR.org. We've got about 2 minutes left. In that time, you spent time with Reverend Jeffrey Brown in Roxbury. He's one of the co-founders of the 10-Point Coalition. What did you learn from him, Martha?
Well, and from Counselor Anderson, I heard a lot of frustration, some fatigue, because as you heard Dr. Galea said, like, this is a chronic problem. And I heard some anger that there doesn't seem to be big investments on the horizon to try to fix some of these issues. You know, they called for things like more rent-to-own home ownership, apprenticeship programs, much more investment in schools so that kids have opportunities to move up the income ladder. Yeah, I also did hear some hope, though, I want to mention, Tiziana, because Frederica Williams, who is at the Whittier Street Health Center, is doing a lot of outreach into the community to try to address not just the unmet health needs, but also do more to connect people to the social services that will help with their underlying health issues, you know, like better housing, like jobs, like food assistance. So there is a lot happening in the community. It's just not fast enough and doesn't have the investment needed.
I'll note you're referring to Boston City Councilor Tanya Fernandez Anderson there. Yes. All right. So 30 seconds, Martha. You know, you've reported on healthcare for a long time. What do you watch for now with these new numbers out?
I think we do need some more information about exactly what the issues are that are driving the disparities in the gaps in the life. But I think the housing is a big place to watch. As Dr. Galea was saying to Ziana, we have to find ways to get people into housing that supports both their health, but they're also their mental health and dignity.
Boy, isn't that the topic that just keeps coming up. WBUR health reporter Martha Biebinger, it is always great to have you, and I always learn when we do. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Tiziana.